This is the Geek Improvement Podcast. Tune in. Geek out.
And welcome to the official podcast of geekimprovement.com, where we help you find and keep track of the things you geek out about. I'm Alexi Santos, and if this is the very first time that you're listening to the podcast, it is the audio counterpart to the website where you can add what books, movies, and games you've watched, read, or played to your library, find new ones, chat with other folks about things that they found, old favorites, and we're generally trying to compile a giant database as quickly as we can of, you know, the most geeky media content that exists on the face of the planet. And with me, to my right in dubious, nebulous Skype land, is Mr. Terry Jackson. Terry, how goes?
Considering the fact that with that giant database we're putting together, Alexis, I'm a one-man, you know, sweatshop. It's not too bad.
Well, I'm trying to refrain from making jokes about Nike shoes. So in order to continue successfully refraining, David, you are also with us again this week. Have you survived the sweatshop?
Well, you know, luckily enough, I have been kept busy with schoolwork. Therefore, I am not sweatshop material. I am edumacated.
And we have a very special guest. We have Mr. Sean Buckley. Sean, are you
alive? I'm not in a sweatshop. Coattails.
I'm sorry, what?
And fortune.
Skype land decided to cut you out.
Skype didn't want the world to know that I'm just riding your coattails. I'm not sweating. I'm in no shop. I am in the office, riding your coattails to the highest possible place.
Well, for those of you who don't know, Sean and I go way back to the days of Infendo, Infendo.com, a Nintendo fan site, where we did the podcast over there.
And from about a year, I think.
Yeah, for a year. Actually, it was pretty much a year on the dot. At least for my tenure on the podcast. And then, you know, we did some writing about the video games on VG Tribune. And now we've moved on to Greener Pastures over at Engadget as our my day job.
Yeah, I just kind of stumbled and fell and wound up on this major tech blog thing. Neither of us really know how it happened.
Mostly determination.
Vice.
And
we don't know.
Determination and being crazy enough to believe it'll happen.
Voodoo magic, human sacrifice.
He's much more fun than you, Alexis.
Well, Terry, that makes me feel so good.
You're such a good friend, Terry.
You should see what happens when we hang out.
Well, you know what? Let's speaking of good friends, Terry, Cookie Clicker.
I hate you guys. Have I told you that this week?
For those who haven't heard about Cookie Clicker before, or weren't with us for the other podcast, just type in Cookie Clicker into Google and you'll quickly find out what it is. It is a JavaScript game where you click on a giant cookie to produce more cookies, and then you can hire grandmas and like these different types of like essentially cookie producing units to produce even more cookies for some absolutely.
All right, whoa. That is way too of an involved description to describe what this game is. This game is. It's hard when you hear about it on Twitter, right? It looks like this is the next big Android app game. You know, this is like, you know, Bejeweled 17 or whatever. It's not even that. All right, it's a JavaScript game. Counts how many times you clicked that cookie. That's it.
Have you even tried it? Because there's a lot more to it than just clicking the damn cookie. You got
That's
the grandmas
all there is.
Revolting. I had to sacrifice an infant to stop the grandmas from revolting. Okay?
It's
don't
a click counter.
Knock my sacrifice.
It doesn't count. It's just a click counter.
And, so after we recorded last week's podcast, I thought, Cookie Clicker, I'm not gonna, This is.
Then the next day, they're both sitting there in Skype with me, and they're like, "Make it stop, Terry."
Pretty much, but I was able to save after I got my last, or to stop after I got my last, my very first antimatter condenser, which is like the highest kind of cookie production unit you can have. So.
You both are quitters.
I've started clicking cookies just to prove you guys that it's just a counter. I'm 196.
It starts out like that. I'm not even clicking cookies right now, and I'm generating 17 billion a second.
I ended up stopping once I sacrificed to the grandmas, and then the return wasn't good enough. I just stopped. Completely shut the thing down, haven't went back to it in about 4 or 5 days.
This is perfect because I'm the ignorance guy that's only seen the counting button thing. So why don't you guys explain how this, beyond clicking for cookies and seeing how many times you click the button, where does the depth of this game come from? Because still, now at 400 cookies, all I'm seeing is a click counter.
You're chasing the dragon, Sean, and you'll catch him eventually.
I've almost caught it. I almost have it. I got all the upgrades. Just got to get the 200.
What upgrades? Please, for the listeners, explain like you're an idiot. What is this game? I don't understand. I'm still clicking it. I don't get it.
It's like a resource management game. You spend cookies to buy upgrades that will get you more cookies.
Oh, right, to buy a grandma. I thought I just got a grandma automatically for getting 100 cookies.
No, you buy it.
And then you
can buy the upgrades to make the things more effective. You buy upgrades to make the things more effective or act in a different way.
Okay, so it's a game that counts how many times you click things, and then you can get upgrades that do stuff for what you click. Like, I mean, that makes a little bit more sense.
Hello and welcome to the Cookie Clicker podcast on NPR. We have Professor of Cookie Clicking, Terry Jackson. And he's also been playing Pokemon, because Pokemon X and Y are out, baby! Finally! After so many years that we'd been waiting for some sort of a 3D.
Oh, are we done with cookies already?
Yeah, we're done with cookies. You gotta cut the cookies off as cleanly as you can, because if not, they'll keep sucking life from you, man.
But Alexis, I just got two grandmas. I think I'm getting this game.
No, don't get it. Take it back to Best Buy. Return it.
You just gotta wait till your grandmas become one consciousness and start threatening the very fabric of your universe.
I think have to sacrifice an infant.
Unless these grandmas are playing Pokemon, I don't know if we're ready to move on.
Trust me, you may not move on from Cookie Clicker for a couple of days now that we've got you hooked. It's those cookies are laced with something, I'm sure. Patrick, friend of the show at PH Mullins on Twitter, says because of that cookie game that cost me 2 weeks of my life. So he knows, he's been there.
He was infected.
Fortunately, a friend and or family member who wishes to remain anonymous reported him to a support group who helped him break his addiction.
All right. Well, since I ruined your introduction to the next subject, can I take us back there?
Oh, absolutely.
All right. So, Pokemon X and Y. It's almost as good as the MMO Pokemon game you wanted, but not. This is coming from a guy who has played exactly 4 minutes of the game so far. Terry, what's going on with Pokemon X and Y?
Well, I haven't played that much more than I haven't gotten much further than you, but
oh, well, then someone on the podcast who's played, please.
He's played a lot longer. See, Terry,
I have played a lot longer. You didn't let me finish. I have played a lot longer, but I haven't gotten that far. I spent 4 hours in the first patch of grass training.
Thanks.
So that's, I can't say that much. But
that's dedication. We should probably talk about what's new about X and Y.
Well, let's see. One of the big things is there's now a legal way to cheat in X and Y. It's called Wonder Trade.
Wonder
stock up on all the crappy Pokemon you have, throw them at Wonder Trade, and wait till you get something good, because eventually you'll get something like a level 21 Snubbull.
Wonder Trade is when you go into the internet settings, after you get your Pokemon and you go into the internet settings, you go into your friends thing, and there's a Wonder Trade option right there. And what it does is you pick a Pokemon that you're willing to, essentially it's a gamble, technically, but you can screw the system. You can put a Pokemon up there, and it will randomly pair you with someone else who has put a Pokemon up, and you'll automatically trade it. No consent, no nothing like that beyond the fact that you put this up.
It's like a random lottery trade.
Here's an example.
That's a terrible idea.
I put up a level two Weedle that I caught because I hate Weedle. So I put him up and I got a level 15 Absol in return. Completely random. And just like that, I got much better than what I put in. And I take a 6 sort of satisfaction in what I gave to that guy in return.
Gosh, I hope they patch that.
I don't know. It can be kind of. I don't think it can be. I don't know if it can be game breaking in that, like when I in Oblivion when I like discover the glitch where you
there's
can.
There's got to be some kind of counters or something. I don't imagine anyone's going to sacrifice anything that too worthwhile, and it's only the first day, so maybe people are getting the hang of it, trying to understand what it is, seeing how it works.
I wouldn't be surprised if Nintendo implemented a comparable level system, because if you can trade a 2 for level 15, that's a game-breaking bug right there.
Yeah, I got a level 21 from that.
I got a 23 and a 22. Actually, I got a 22, a 21, and a 23.
Do it based on what badge you have? I don't know.
See, this is a very special Pokemon game for me, not because of that or any of the other particular new features, but so I haven't really played a Pokemon game seriously since Red and Blue, actually. I've always been okay with the series, but the last one I actually bought was Heart Gold because I remember playing, you know, Red and Blue and never played the follow-up game. So I bought Heart Gold and never beat it. So this is a special game to me because it's finally done something to get me to get back into the series, which has moved on between the traditional graphics. You actually have a 3D environment, which was kind of interesting in black and white, but now they're also using the Nintendo 3DS features to a limited extent. And so that's actually kind of brought me back to the game, and it's a little overwhelming because I'm told there's something like 700 Pokemon now, and I only know about 170.
Yeah, but this is a good thing, I think, because there are only about 64 or so actual new ones compared to like Black and White. And so
White implemented probably the largest number of new ones. I think about, was it 153 or was it 157?
Yeah, but I didn't even play that one. So
for me, since I've been out of the series really since about Sapphire and Ruby, I'm getting a huge chunk of new Pokemon as well. But as far as the graphics go, man, I am a happy camper. Two things that disappoint me. Clearly, you know, you can look at the screen and notice jaggies, and I think, man, if 3DS only had a bit more horsepower, you know, those jaggies would be gone. And two, the 3D isn't everywhere. It's not on the overworld. It's only in battles and, like, trades and stuff, so.
Because I wasn't paying attention, I didn't actually find that aspect out until after I bought it, and that probably would have actually influenced my decision. The 3DS, I don't actually use the 3D function that much, but I was kind of waiting on that Pokemon to actually use this feature. And the fact that it's only partial 3D, I think this is the first 3DS game I played where there's sections of the games that are specifically not 3D. And I think it's really unique. I also think it's a little disappointing.
On the very bottom of the box.
You've only played for 4 minutes. Maybe it'll be...
Well, but from what I understand from listening to my dear sweet friend Alexis, there's large portions of the games that are simply not 3D. The dumbest 3DS game is fully 3D.
Because, for example, every battle can be 3D. Every battle, every evolution, every trade is full 3D.
Doing one of those things at least every 5 minutes.
Well, true. I'm just comparing to, like, the with the exception of Virtual Console games, every release for 3DS so far that I've known, like, even like Cave Story, that's like, hey, let's Cave Story, let's make it 3D for, you know, because it's just on the system. And it's interesting there's a first-party Nintendo game where the overworld isn't. And I just think that's a weird and interesting choice, and I'm not sure if it's necessary.
Yeah, and I wonder why they did that.
I think it's because it's still in a pseudo top-down camera angle when you're mostly in the world. So it'd probably come off a little weird using 3D in the overworld.
Overly impacting.
Possibly.
So I've made a list as I've played things. Man, Professor, what's his name? Augustine Sycamore? He is a handsome man.
Everyone's got a boner for that guy.
He has it going on, Terry. We can't help it. He's got it going on.
Even you, your character thinks he has an alluring scent. And it's not my fault I got lost in his eyes.
Now, there are some problems with him. So, in the game, at the very beginning, you get a letter from him. Well, first of all, he has a request for 5 kids in town. That
sounds really creepy.
Exactly. Secondly,
and all of these kids are absolutely infatuated with him and his alluring scent.
And so then you take a letter from him to your mom, who hasn't heard of the guy, and she goes, and the letter's requesting that, you know, you go off, get a Pokemon, and explore the world.
She gets aroused by the letter.
And she goes, oh, okay, that sounds like a great idea. A guy I don't know, but is a professor? Sure, you can go meet him.
Then, man, Alexis, you're getting into a deep hole here. Let's not talk about how creepy
Pokemon is,
In general. Like, everything about Pokemon is morally reprehensible.
Yeah, what was the concept of black and white? The whole freedom fighter PETA Pokemon people, it's wrong to enslave Pokemon, so you have to beat them back with your enslaved Pokemon.
Oh, is that part of Black and White? That's actually fairly
Black and White, the Team Rocket, Team whatever equivalent was at the core a PETA free the Pokemon type thing.
At its core, and the team, basically its leader, wanted to make sure no one could have Pokemon so that he could use his Pokemon that he thoroughly abused to lead a dictatorship across the whole world.
That was ultimately the thing, but that wasn't the concept he sold to everyone else.
No, because he's good at lying and brainwashing. Like most religions.
So
Whoa.
Never mind.
So speaking of Black and White, actually, so the game launched today, the day we're recording, and so I had a friend that wanted to do one of the we went to GameStop to go pick it up, and they had a Pokemon tournament there. And have you guys ever been to a Pokemon tournament, like an in store Pokemon tournament?
Yep. Yes.
I think I have, but that might have been a dream.
Back when Red and Blue were the thing, we went to the Florida Mall, me and my brother.
Yep.
We sat there and we had a Pokemon tournament. I lasted three rounds before I got knocked out.
Ditto,
Was your experience as creepy as mine?
I don't know. My first opponent was a hot chick. My second opponent was a kid about my age, which was about, 11, maybe, give or take? And then, the third opponent was this little girl who kind of creeped me out.
That's a million times better than my experience. there's nothing even more dangerous, but there's something a little weird about a 30-year-old man poke battling a 12-year-old.
Yeah, that's just a little bit creepy.
So you were the creepy guy.
I wasn't playing. I don't have Pokemon Black and White. I haven't played since Blue. My friend was a little creepy. In fact, he actually won the tournament, which was awesome because before the tournament he bought Pokemon X, and then he won a copy of Pokemon X. So it's kind of
he loves Pokemon, so yeah. But I gotta say, when I went to the same thing, the Florida Mall, David. It was as an 11 or 12 year old, it was a fantastic experience because
they were giving out gyms.
And you could get badges.
I got that. I did that.
Yeah, and you could attach them to your Game Boy through that little keychain area
little
thing.
They gave you little badges for winning.
So it was pretty cool. So I got a couple other things on this list here. I have, what's that bird Pokemon, Terry? One of my rituals / OCD things is naming Pokemon actual names like Tom and Jim and Jerry or Reginald
Steve.
And Steve and stuff like that. So I named a bird Pokemon Lyle. And the game is telling me about Lyle's big pecs. Apparently
what?
I'm a little confused as well.
That is a defense like a power-up.
His ability.
Yeah, his ability. So since I named him Lyle, it occasionally says that. The last thing on my list is a small gripe, is the box. With the box where you store all your Pokemon, which, by the way, is still called someone's PC, Sean. So you're storing it on some stranger's PC.
What is going on with that? I'm sorry, I have to stop everything here. This is a fundamental problem I have with Pokemon. Apparently, Pokemon can be digitally stored, which, all right, that's fine. I guess that makes sense. Pokemon or Digimon, whatever. But, like Red in the first game, Red, he's like, I got too many Pokemon. I'm going to be, here's someone else's PC. I don't know who they are. Just put my Pokemon over there. It's good. Okay. It's good. I mean, you need cloud storage, right? Okay, I can get cloud storage to Google. But are you going to go find Joe Schmo's PC and put your family vacation pics on there? No. Why would you store your pets there?
I have never actually thought of it like that, but now you just blew my mind.
It's super disturbing and strange. What is there's no sense of security.
Well, you're still storing it on some stranger's box here, but that's not what irks me personally. What irks me is that the box still has the menu system, the way the box works. So if you want to withdraw a Pokemon, you go into the withdraw section.
You're not doing
it
right, Alexis.
Oh, really?
Go to organize box, and you can move Pokemon and deposit Pokemon straight from your box or your party.
Oh, okay. Well, strike that from my list.
They've had something like this for the last couple generations. It used to be called Move Pokemon. Now it's called Organize Box.
So, and what were you going to say, Alexis?
I blame it on terrible labeling.
Because, general policy is David is wrong.
that you can, when you go into like withdraw, you can only withdraw Pokemon. When you go into deposit, you can only deposit Pokemon. There's no.
And you say they got rid of that, David, or you made it so you can do it.
For the past couple generations, they've had something called Move Pokemon, which would allow you to move them between your box and your party. Mm-hmm. Now, recently, they changed to something called Organize Box. This allows you to organize Pokemon from your party and your box. You can switch them, withdraw, and trade them off however you want.
Now, before we move on from Pokemon, I think it'd be a good policy to discuss some of the rituals / the OCD kind of behaviors that we have when we play Pokemon. One of my rituals is naming my my character AJ, simply because my cousin named his DJ his first name, and I don't know, his middle name isn't a J, but anyway, it's my first and middle initials, and so naturally I had to do that here. And another kind of ritual is that I always have to level my starter Pokemon, like keep it always above like the random ones I find out in the field or whatever. And now, catching everything in sight. Like, if it's a Weedle, don't care. Gonna catch it.
That's the opposite. I don't catch anything.
I used to be that way, but I don't know. Lately, I thought, if I'm gonna play Pokemon, damn it, then I'm gonna play it to hell. I'm gonna
gotta catch them all is the catchphrase of the Opiate or whatever the thing. They're just trying to control you, man. You gotta catch as few as possible.
What's the point of that? The more you catch, the more power you have. The more control.
Nah, the more worthless level ones you have. You just need like an elite team of like oppressive, horrible monsters.
Besides, given the Wonder Trade thing, the more fodder you have, the better. So there's no reason not to catch everything that pops up. I'm completely with you on that, Alexis.
I don't catch anything.
It's fun to obey the machine.
My rule is catch as many things as I can, always first generation, and just do that. You know, strategy? No. Just catch them and get them all level 100, you'll kill everything. It's fine.
Normally, I come up with a list before I start the game on which Pokemon are going to be in my team, and those are usually the only ones I end up catching.
That's a million.
Everything else is used as a filler until then.
Yeah, see, David knows where it's at. You just get one elite team and rule the world with that. Why bother
and
wasting
also,
food
I
and
normally,
money?
I try to keep all mine within even levels. If one of them starts over leveling, I start switching them out on the fly, which means I'm gonna have to start turning off that experience share here soon because it's kind of funking with my role.
I'm really looking forward to this experience share because there's something very special I do with every Pokemon game.
Experience share. Every Pokemon gets experience now.
That's super super important for what I do. Every Pokemon game I get, which has been two so far, I try very hard to get a level 100 Caterpie.
Why?
This is extremely important to me. A level 100 Caterpie is the best Pokemon.
Why Caterpie? Why not Magikarp?
Because Magikarp, everyone expects that. Like, you know, Magikarp, everyone knows that's... And you can, besides, Magikarp is more powerful. You can beat the Elite Four with nothing but a Magikarp and items. I've seen it happen.
Magikarp and Flail?
And Tackle. Magikarp can get Tackle.
Oh. Level 1,
on YouTube, someone
level
has
one
done
Auron.
It.
Level now, 1 Auron. Flail, Endeavor, Sandstorm, and I think there's one other ability he has, the sweep teams of level 100s.
Now, level 100 Caterpie, not only is that nonsensical, you know, because no one cares, but Caterpie's only good to evolve into whatever. I don't even care what he evolves into because I don't let him do it. But you battle someone, right, and you throw out a level 100 Caterpie as your first move, you throw him off. They're like, whoa, what's this guy up to, man? He's like, this guy's a moron, right?
And then they kill you in a flamethrower.
And they kill that Caterpie instantly, or you take it back just to screw with them, and you demolish them with your super elite team. And you know, just before you know, they think they're gonna, you know, come back at you, they got their last Pokemon, he's down to half health, you throw that Caterpie back out there, all right? And he's, you know, it's a mind
game. So you want a level 100 Caterpie for the sake of blowing their mind,
also for the sake of having the best Caterpie ever.
All right?
You know that Pokemon trainer that you run into in the first game that's obsessed with Rattata?
The same one you run into this game?
I'm that guy with Caterpie, all right?
You run into Joey again in here. He's the forest.
I'm Joey, except for Caterpie, all right? And you just need the one. Actually, this is the thing I had Because, you know, when you're young, you have ideas about games that are completely false. Mm-hmm. You know, like secrets you think should exist. For some reason, when the first Pokemon game came out, I thought, you know, Caterpie is the weakest, worst Pokemon ever. Wouldn't it be great if I made this game? I would make his stats boost exponentially at level 99 for no reason. And this would be the ultimate secret of the game. That's how I would have made the game. So I said, I'm going to do it. Surely someone thinks exactly like me in Japan.
And so just some subconscious part of you secretly hoping, get that Caterpie to level 100 and he ascends.
So, lots of effort later and huge disappointment. But now it's a tradition. I must do it.
Have you ever accomplished it?
With Rare Candy in the first game, I think I got in Heart Gold, I got one to like level 60 and then I got tired.
So going back to the Rattatas, there's something that you mentioned earlier to me on the phone that is pretty interesting about the Red and Blue.
Oh, you're telling this story?
Oh, yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Okay. So actually, this is Pokemon lore. I'm surprised Alexis didn't know it. But anyone who keeps up with stupid lore stuff and stupid fan theories was about Gary's Raticate. And so in the original, you've ever heard of it? Yeah. So, yeah,
I've heard of this one. I've heard of this one.
So in the original game, I don't think it's Lavender Town. I don't know. It's the one with all the ghosts. And Gary shows up, and you're walking along. Red's walking along. Gary says, like, hey, man, have you ever had a Pokemon? He says, quiet for a while. And then he fights you. And it's like, whatever. That's weird. All right. So you don't think about that. You just go through your game. But if you really think about it, in the game, in the last battle you had before that was on the SSN on the boat, you fought Gary's Raticate. And you demolished it because you're the main character and you're awesome. So his Raticate is defeated, and then you never see that Raticate again. You see evolutions of all his other previous Pokemon getting more powerful, but not that Raticate. And he's at that Lavender Town place where you're supposed to mourn Pokemon. And so the whole concept is this complex fan theory about how you're really the villain of the series because you killed his Raticate. And then he mourned it, and he tried to become a better person and not blame you for it and move forward in his life and become the head of the Pokemon League. And then 5 seconds after he's head of the Pokemon League, you come and demolish him and ruin his dreams again.
He committed the crime of being Gary. That's his dreams are forfeit.
I guess you can put it even worse. After you become champion, his grandfather is so aroused by it that he
wow. I have seen that. Professor Oak's first words upon arriving in the Elite Four is, when I heard I came.
I'm not going to ask any further questions.
I mean, he arrived. He got there in time. Yeah. You know, we're not 12. We're all adults here.
When did this happen? You are. So, we can't be adults. We're still playing Pokemon.
While we're on the subject of Blue, I popped in my old cartridge, and it turns out I'd only have 72 Pokemon on my Pokedex.
There was only 150, so that's like half.
Oh, okay. I guess I did okay. I had the Zapdos.
Welcome to the Pokemon Improvement Podcast. It's all Pokemon all the time.
Well, I mean, I guess we got to do it. I mean, you know, it's the big thing of the week. Well,
Red and Blue, see, I talk about it a lot because it's the only one I played. But my Pokemon career ended when my Game Boy Color fell out of my pocket on the lawn of my friend's super Christian high school. And someone didn't report it to Lost and Found, which would have been the Christian thing to do.
What do you mean? It's a Game Boy. It's filled with the devil.
Yeah, that might have been the case, actually. But in any case, that's one of the reasons I never really picked up Pokemon again since I lost it. So Red and Blue killed my love for Pokemon by being awesome and disappearing.
Oh, and on the note of having a level 100 Caterpie and, you know, kind of throwing people off, my tactic was to have a level 100 Gyarados and name it Dratini. Oh. And
name it,
you know what? Okay,
name
I'll tell you.
I'm hearing some pain as if someone has experienced whatever this.
I will tell the story because I had the last laugh in this one.
Yep, he did.
Years ago, I believe it was with your red version, right, Alexis?
I found it on blue, actually.
Okay, it was on your blue version. I think I had yellow at the time, and I had just beaten the Elite Four. We were around the same thing. And Alexis used the Game Shark, right, Alexis?
Yeah, it was Game Shark.
He used the Game Shark to get infinite rare candies and boost all of his Pokemon up to level 100 without my knowledge.
Some of them.
And what?
Not all of them. Some of them were still like level 80s and stuff.
Yeah, oh yeah. Well, he boosted up a Gyarados to level 100, and he named it something, you know, that wasn't really that threatening, like a Dratini or something like that.
And since the icon was the same, because it was a dragon, I told Terry, hey, I'm going to fight you with a Dratini, and I'm going to beat you.
I'm only going to beat you with a Dratini. And then he throws out, he throws this thing out, and he kicks my ass. But the best part of this, okay, I was humiliated and all that, but because Alexis used the Game Shark to get infinite rare candies to level himself up, when he went downstairs from the Pokemon Center after his victory against me, he found out he was stuck in a wall. So all he could do was stay upstairs, trade with me, and so he said, all right, I'm going to restart my game, but first I'm going to trade all my important level 100 Pokemon over to you. And so he did, and he gets his level 100 Pokemon, he starts a new file, I trade all of his Pokemon back, and at the time, we were young, neither of us were aware of the badge thing or anything, so we go to fight again, he goes to revel in his victory again, and all of a sudden, his level mighty level 100 Gyarados falls asleep, and I beat him with my level 40s or 50s because his Gyarados is too busy falling asleep and
not obeying.
Right, because they don't obey you because you only have like one badge.
Oh, the dismay in his voice! It's been years, and it still gives me pleasure.
That was an experience.
To be fair about Game Shark, is I did use Ultimate Rare the first times I got the 100 Caterpie. It was a Game Shark thing. But I was so upset by how weak he was that I Game Sharked in Fly Attack and Swim, I think. So this Caterpie could, like, travel me across the world and
fly. He could fly and go to the depths of the ocean.
And kick ass in battle, okay, as long as no one attacked him because he's still super weak.
That's the ultimate Caterpie.
It was the ultimate Caterpie, and I used it in a Pokemon tournament once, and ironically, I lost. So with my hacked Pokemon, but whatever.
So
I was like 13, whatever.
So last thing before we move on from Pokemon, I think we should share our unorthodox Pokemon names. Right now, I have Lars, Lyle, Felix, something in Japanese, and I kept.
Wait, something in Japanese. You didn't name it.
It's a result of the Wonder Trade. He traded and he got a Japanese Pokemon.
Oh. Tolerable. Go on.
Yeah, that's all everybody I have in my party so far. Terry, would you care to explain your names?
I have the same thing as you. I like to give my Pokemon interesting nicknames, but I tend to only do it with Pokemon I know I have some intent of using or using at some point in time. So I have my Fletchling. His name is Jim because I swear he looks like Captain Kirk. And then I have...
He also likes the same things as Kirk, doesn't he, Terry?
Should I tell that story, Alexis?
I don't remember it, so probably not.
are we gonna have a Kirk-Picard debate? Because I would love that.
Why? Which side are you on?
Neither. I just love the debate. It's fun.
Okay. Janeway! Archer!
I'm fighting the urge to go on that segue, but okay, back to my Pokemon.
Archer is better than all of them combined.
I have Fletchling. His name's Jim, because he reminds me of Captain Kirk. Then I have, what is, Bunnerby. He's Donnie the Face Shooter. I have Frankie the Squealer. Johnny the Kidney Puncher. That was Alexis's idea. Then I have... Alexis gifted me what was it you gifted me?
A little Leo,
that he had named Celine. And then I have an Asian one and an Absol that I got off of the Wonder Trade, so I haven't been able to name them.
Well, what racism is this? You have an Asian Pokemon? Did you say that?
Okay, you know what I mean. It's languages.
It came.
You got yourself from an Asian Pokemon? All right. Just making sure. Let's move on. David, it's your turn.
All right. Currently in my party, I have a Bulbasaur by the name of Victor. I have my next one, my Frogadier by the name of Lowell. I got a Hawklucha that I got from the trade, the Wonder Trade, whose nickname was Howla. I didn't get to name it, so. And then I got a Litleo by the name of Cindy, a Granbull, which I also got as a Snubbull from the Wonder Trade. Its name is Lubbins. Lubbins. And I have a Vivillon named Vivi. Those are my six Pokemon.
I do have one more thing to add on this. With the Wonder Trade thing, and the fact that traded Pokemon, you can't change their names, or at least you can't change their names if they've been nicknamed. So every Pansage, and if you look up Pansage, you'll see why. Every Pansage that I've caught, and I've caught a bunch of them, I am going to start sticking them up on the Wonder Trade and giving them to various people, getting them across the internet and through people's games. I have named every single one Bob Ross, because that's exactly what Pansage looks like. So I'm going to be spreading Bob Ross Pansages across the Wonder Trade system.
Terry, happy little trees to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Terry, I barely know you, but I support this effort and forgive your previous racism for that.
Thank you, John.
For the sake of this effort, Bob Ross's love must be spread. I don't actually name my Pokemon anything. I've always just called them whatever they are for the sake of organization, but I'm going to change that because, one, I love naming things Steve. I name everything Steve. But more importantly, I was originally going to get the cute little green one that's wearing like a beanie or something. I'm talking about the starter Pokemon. I don't know. What's his name? Chespin?
Yep.
Chespin. Yes.
But I wanted to get him, but then I saw his final evolution, and it's butt ugly, so I can't
get it. Yeah, I was heavily disappointed. They had promise, and they dropped the ball.
Everyone here agrees with you.
Yep.
Yeah, so I can't, for such an adorable starter, I can't wind up with such a butt ugly Pokemon. I don't know what's wrong with the designers. So even though it's the ugliest starter in the beginning stage, I'm going to have to go with Frogface, because he turns into a ninja, and he's
your
blue.
Ninja is best Pokemon.
Which means
internet high five, Sean. That's who I have.
Which means, well, I don't even like frogs. So, but the reason I'm going to get him is because, one, he's blue. Two, he's a ninja, which means I can name him Dororo from Sergeant Frog, and it's awesome. Because he's a blue ninja frog.
I have not seen Sergeant Frog, but that's something Geek Improvement, I need to improve on.
I've seen a couple episodes. It's pretty trippy. You might want to watch it after a couple glasses of scotch.
It's very silly. But unfortunately, after I decided this, I saw on Instagram that a ton of other people have done the same thing. So I am uncreative, but it's happening. It's happening.
Yeah, I simply can't do Froakie because of frogs. That's a line I cannot cross.
What's wrong with frogs? They're harmless.
You are a speciesist, Alexis.
There, I am?
Look,
have
man.
Have either of you ever seen Alexis react to a frog?
No.
You can see the terror, the horror. I almost sympathize with him, admits laughing at him.
All right. This is a man that fishes for sharks.
And horror monsters.
While in the water, mind you.
We've caught a few horror monsters with Alexis. Right, one of them was yellow with buck teeth.
Yep.
You come my way over here in Southern California or wherever the hell I live. Mm-hmm. And we'll go frog gigging. And you'll get over your fear of frog by stabbing them with pitchforks.
Oh, I thought frog gigging was just a fancy way of saying hunting hippies.
No, yeah. Well, that'd be French hippies, which ties into Pokemon X.
It's a French region.
All right, well, now that we're about done with Pokemon, let's circle back around to Cookie Clicker, because I think I'm finally getting the hang of this game.
Oh, you're still playing. That makes me way happier than it should.
808 cookies per second. So this is definitely an evolution on the game that it totally ripped off. And if anyone's ever heard of Saturday Morning Breakfast Cereal Theater, there's a game. They created a game called MMO. Which is an MMO where they just take out all the BS, you know. It's just, you know, you don't need the stupid fantasy. You just level, and you level by clicking a button, and one click is one level. And it in the theater, it eventually destroyed the entirety of the human race and could only be saved by addiction to crack. But more importantly, this is MMO Evolved. So Cookie Clicker, I'm kind of getting into this. I gotta hand it to you, Terry or David, whoever was telling me I was wrong. It is more complex, and it's acceptable.
And you know that people have looked into the JavaScript code of Cookie Clicker, and dungeons are coming at some point. There's currently a beta version that doesn't have the dungeons yet.
Even I'm not sure how that's going to work.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I want grandmas running around in dungeons. They already have one mine, and they're already Eldritch Abominations. I don't think I want them to get loot from dungeons.
David, what's wrong with you? Are you anti-old people trying to take away their driver's license?
What do you mean?
To raid dungeons?
I had a massive
harem of
grandmas.
They're people too, David.
They had intergalactic harem of grandmas. I had a farmer harem of grandmas. I had a miner harem of grandmas. And an Eldritch Abomination harem of grandmas. I am a grandma lover.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the Cookie Clicker podcast.
So we'll return to Cookie Clicker later on. But I just wanted to bring that up again. It is growing on me throughout this podcast.
So, Sean, something that you actually covered over at Engadget, Neo Geo, for those who weren't familiar with the Neo Geo's return in a kind of a new console that was both portable and that you could hook up to a TV, why don't you explain the lowdown and Neo Geo's recent troubles?
Seriously? You want me to talk? I think this is against my contract, Alexis.
Wait.
You want me to breach contract with AOL? Is that what you want me to do?
I was going
to
say, wait, is this really against contract?
I don't know. It's tech. Can you talk about tech for someone else? Am I allowed to do that?
So
Neo Geo Gold X, for those of you not familiar with it, was a handheld developed by a company called Tomo. And it was licensed with SNK Playmore. And what it is basically a handheld that only plays Neo Geo ROMs. And that's fine. You know, it's a handheld, and that's interesting enough in itself. And it's got a D-pad thumbstick that represents recreates the clicky feeling of the original Neo Geo joystick. And, you know, whatever. That's cool. But what was really neat about the initial Neo Geo X Gold was it came with a console dock. And you would put the handheld inside of this console that looks just like the original Neo Geo, except for a lot smaller and a lot less expensive. And then that has an HDMI out that goes to your HDTV and allows you to play with a traditional Neo Geo-style joystick. And it was, like, a really cool product that had a really hard time launching and had a really hard time getting out of pre-orders or whatever. But, you know, it was a niche and an interesting product for the retro collector. Sometime, I think it was last week or the week before. It was last weekend, yeah. SNK Playmore came out with this statement. And they said, hey, by the way, Tomo, the creator of the Neo Geo X Gold, is going to have to stop. We just canceled the contract. They're not allowed to make it anymore. And, no more. They're not allowed to make it. They're going to have to cancel it all and recall their products. And so that was kind of a weird way to shut it down. And so we all thought, you know, things happen. Contracts break. But what got really dramatic about it is just a few days after that, after refusing comment to the folks at Engadget, who I happen to be part of, Tomo came out and they said, we didn't break contract and SNK Playmore can deal with it. So unless they can prove we can break contract, we fully expect them to respect their rights to the contract and fully support us and allow us to continue making this console. And we're going to keep selling it until a lawsuit happens, basically. And it's super awkward. Out of all the tech things I've covered in the last couple of years working in tech blogging, I've never really seen such a petty fight over press releases.
Yeah.
And it's just like... It's kind of like being on a bus and watching a married couple fight over infidelity. It's just like,
or their kids.
This is uncomfortable. I wish my stop was here because I don't want to listen to this anymore.
Well, you could instigate the situation, make it fun for everybody.
It's really interesting. But I can't think of another parallel where this sort of thing has happened, where they're fighting over a license agreement in the public space. This is usually very much a behind closed door kind of debate,
right? Because they haven't exactly said what, you know, triggered this like cancellation,
right? And it's very odd because normally it's odd for the first of all for a company to come out and say a contract is canceled to the public without talking to their partner first, which is SNK Playmore did versus Tomo. But it's even stranger instead of them responding in closed doors and working out a deal and then releasing a joint press release announcing the resolution for them just to shoot back. This is like watching a forum debate in like the comments of some video game blog blowing up. It's a little hilarious.
It kind of sounds like a married couple airing their dirty laundry just to try and get their neighbors to pick sides.
That's kind of what
I'm getting from it.
Except I don't think SNK intended that way. I think SNK just kind of put out and said this statement and wouldn't really think about it. And then Tomo came and was like, all right, you know, you brought this out. We're going to throw down in the public.
It's a bro down. It's a bro down between peoples.
It looks like it'll turn out all right, at least for Tomo. It looks like they'll get their way. At least I hope.
Yeah, I think it looks like there's nothing for SNK Playmore to do about what they're doing because it seems like they're technically right. No one broke any contract, so there's no way they can legally terminate the contract, but they're definitely not happy about it. So I think any future endeavors between the two companies are probably dead. And they have a contract until, I think, was it 2014 or 2015? So for at least another year or two, you can still get this kind of a... 2016? Yeah, for another couple years, you can still look at this quirky device. But man, I wouldn't have any hope for future deals between them, which is kind of too bad because the other licensed products I know of that SNK has licensed out are super expensive. You can buy premium wooden Neo Geos, which are essentially the original hardware, except for in highly customized cases with digital outputs. But they're $800. They're as expensive as the original Neo Geo.
Yeah, these you can get one from Amazon Prime for $169. So it's not a bad deal.
For the Neo Geo X Gold, yeah. $169 is a good deal. If you're a big Neo Geo fan, which I never really was, it was revolutionary for the time for sure, but I wasn't really exposed to it as a child. It's definitely a really cool product. They don't want you to know this, but it's pretty darn hackable too. So if you have Neo Geo ROMs, which we do not endorse here at Geek Improvement, do we? I don't think we do.
Absolutely not. Well,
we do not endorse. But you
we
can
not
endorse
this
it
beginning.
This week.
We not this week. Last
we
week
endorse
we did.
It every
not
other
week.
Week.
From what I understand, it is fairly easy to inject your own Neo Geo ROMs into it. So if a game isn't officially supported, a lot of games are available to purchase for the device already. But if your favorite game isn't supported, you can technically get it on there. And so it's a cool device. It's fun. It's absolutely unnecessary. But if you're a retro collector, like I sometimes am, it's definitely neat.
All right. So if you want your Neo Geo, head over to Amazon. You can find the link to the show notes along with the story and the drama that you can read in, kind of like a...
Woo! Drama!
Like a... what's his face? Kind of like Captain Kirk. And, act it out if you want.
You are trying to get that debate to spring up, aren't you?
Yes, maybe.
You have no idea how hard it is for me to hold back.
And it'll
really,
be worse.
I thought I already gave my view
the
on
problem,
it.
Terry, the problem is someone else has to actually care. And you see, I'm one of the few people that likes all the captains. I even like Janeway. People don't like Voyager. Do we want to get into this? Do we want to get into Star Trek? Not. Because I've been watching a lot of Star Trek recently.
So is Terry. We can always do it. We can always do it next week.
That sounds like a plan. I mean, we don't want it to go into like a cookie clicker kind of debate. Maybe next week we can rent out kind of like an arena and like loop Terry up with like this oil and maybe Sean.
Just deathmatch. That would be appropriate
exactly.
In Star Trek. It happens a lot.
We can loop Terry like up Q-tip in scotch.
Dude, no, that's such a waste of scotch. No,
not for Terry. He can absorb it straight through his skin.
No, you drink and enjoy that scotch like a gentleman, Terry.
You know, I got pictures.
I have done so, Sean. You
I got
you do not
think.
Well, hold on. What kind of scotch are you talking about? You talking about the barrel, cheap stuff that the hobos drink? That's okay.
Alexis,
you can
tell him.
You can bathe that if you want, but if you're bathing in something nice, 15 years, I hate you.
I got to see if I can't find that that pictures. I got like three pictures of Terry drunk.
What pictures? What was I doing?
You were drunk off your ass when I took those pictures.
Let's save Terry's dignity. So Null Divide, David, is a Vigi game that you spotted.
I won't tell you how I came across it because Alexis probably won't like that. But during David's various searches throughout the internet, I search a lot. I came across where was it? I know I opened it here somewhere. Maybe I didn't.
It's a kind of 8-bit space game. So essentially,
it kind of reminds me of like a dungeon crawler, but 8-bit, spacey, and things of that nature. It heavily reminds me of Sword of the Stars, which I had a very hard addiction to when my brother bought it on Steam sale.
And so you're in it. It's out for Windows, Mac, and Linux, and you're in a ship. That has essentially run out of fuel, and you're next to like this giant space station, and you need to salvage parts from within the space station and find all sorts of machines and robots in there to cannibalize it parts so you can get back home.
To the trailer to this, and I've got to ask you or David, if you're out of fuel, how is your ship still flying?
Auxiliary fuel. I'm actually going to assume that when they say out of fuel, they're thinking like maybe hyperspace
travel.
Fuel, and you only can go under impulse, which is why you're trying to. Find more fuel. You can't get home. So you have to do like maybe you only have impulse. So you got to get
that continuity question aside. This looks pretty awesome.
And this,
it does. I haven't downloaded it yet because I've
free.
Been busy with various things.
And
you are a terrible participant in this COD podcast. This is your story, man.
The soundtrack is actually pretty good. Let's pull some up here.
This. pretty excellent. It's free to play apparently too. So if anyone listening is interested, you could hop over to it looks like mtbstudios.wordpress.com/game/NullDivide. That is the worst.
Or you know,
Null-Divide.
Actually, I could always just link it straight in the chat. People watch it.
Not everyone's in the chat. This is downloadable of like media.
The show notes, guys. Podcast.geekimprovement.com.
Oh, no one reads show notes.
No, but sometimes. Let's fast forward to some where it gets a little faster.
So this is the music?
Yeah.
It's quite loud.
It only sounds loud over Skype. But in post, everything is fixable in post. But it's actually got some pretty sweet music. And
I think this is a good segue into something we don't have on the show notes: chiptune music, like music like this. Have you guys noticed?
Did we talk about that? Go on.
Well, I'm just saying that it's awesome, and that like the fact that that's having a huge resurgence in a lot of games these days is a big deal.
Also, interesting. Yeah. In December, when we go out and cover the big IndieNomicon event down here in Florida, they have a chiptune DJ available. We might be able to get some of his sweet tunes for the podcast that week.
Yeah, see, a chiptune DJ is not something I would have expected to, I guess, see a couple of years ago, but I know some people are using, like, Game Boys and all sorts of stuff to make this kinds of music. So you're right, Sean, there's quite a bit of a resurgence in this kind of stuff.
Actually, chiptune artists are known to have Game Boys or on occasion the Korg DS game plugged into their live stage performances.
Now, speaking of video game music, next week, if you happen to be in the Orlando area, let's see, what's it called? It is Nerdapalooza, obviously a play on Lollapalooza, you know, the big old music festival. They're going to have a three-day music festival, starts on Friday, goes through Sunday. With a whole bunch of indie bands and indie, video game and geek artists. For example, Brental Floss is going to be there. And They Might Be Giants, which is vaguely geeky, and a whole bunch of other folks. Let's see. DJ Cutman, who you might recognize from
OC Remix.
OC Remix and a whole bunch of other folks. So the Friday is free, so that's when we're going to be over there. We'll have some sort of report for the podcast, ready to go for the next episode.
Sounds good.
Fantasy Geek!
Yeah, we got bumpers, Sean.
What was that?
So Mr. Scott, no, not Scott, Scott, Scott Fletcher, yes, who is doing our voiceovers. I mean, we also did the Infendo Radio stuff, too.
Gee, I'm proud of you, Alexis. I'm proud to see that the student has become the master. As the host of Infendo Radio for an entire year, not, you know, really trumpeting myself or anything, I never saw fit to pay anyone to give me new bumpers. I just used the old ones. I don't have money for that.
Well, we never had old ones, so we had to, you know, start from scratch.
Yeah, so, I mean, actually, that's very nice. I'm very excited. So, Fantasy Geek, apparently, what's this about? I'm new to the podcast and don't know anything, so re-explain for your audience, please.
So, now we're into the Fantasy Geek segment, and we are diving into an RPG content creator. It doesn't exactly have a name, I don't think. It's hosted on donjon.bin.sh. It's kind of strange, but it has a whole bunch of different generators for tabletop RPGs. For example, you can make maps, like generate maps. Say, okay, yeah, I want a Mercator map projection.
Ooh,
I
fractal want, world generator.
Yeah, 20% water, maybe 30% ice, and you can adjust the image height and like the rotation, all sorts of stuff, and like generate it, and you have a globe map, or you can have a giant 4,000 pixel hex map that you can download for free.
This is pretty excellent, I have to say.
I mean,
as someone who has been a very bad DM, creating a unique world and a map can be challenging. So if you're just trying to create a quick game and create a bunch of characters, and this is a very useful set of tools.
I had a couple worlds that don't have poles. very interesting.
And it has fantasy name generators and adventure generators too. For example, I guess they probably do for the adventure generators. Oh, like insert noun, insert verb, insert mysterious thing here.
Noun, verb, my noun in the verb.
Stuff like that. But
subtlety is lost on you, isn't it, David?
They have different generators for different systems as well, like AD&D, regular D20 stuff, D&D, 4th edition, Pathfinder, Microlite 20, which I haven't heard of.
Well, this is really gratifying to me to see AD&D. You know, like see an old version of the game that I used to play, you know, with the old stats and the THACO, and makes me feel a little less old, or even more old.
So this isn't the most beautifully designed website, but it gets the job done. So if you're
now this is little 1984.
Yeah, so if you're looking for something quick and easy that can get you started on your quest, this is definitely something to look for. They've even got like random in generators that it can generate menus, patrons, rumors. You can say, oh yeah, I want a townsfolk kind of pub. And it's called the Demon's Pub, and it says the inn is a two-story stone wall building, the elf-wrought tables and chairs, or with elf-wrought tables and chairs. Accommodation consists of yada yada. It has roasted mutton on the menu, boiled pork, and all sorts of kind of things with prices even too, like 11 gold pieces or silver pieces or copper pieces. So pretty neat if you're struggling to find something for your D&D game.
More importantly, for the lazy Dungeon Masters, yes. There is a rather nice dungeon creator that allows you to choose the kind of grid you want, whether are regular, accessible, secure, or death traps, and and it's actually very handy. So if you if your team or your players go off the track and your storyline to go do something completely ridiculous, you're not completely out of luck. You can create a dungeon for them so you can kill and punish them for not letting you force feed them your carefully crafted story.
You know, it would have been nice to find this before we started using that same map over and over, you know, over and over, over again, and yeah. over again. And over.
I don't know, David. That's what made it fun, rubbing that dirt on our faces and
posing as dark dwarves. So, Terry, there's something for you to get excited here about, naturally, because it's about the Lord of the Rings. But unfortunately, we have two folks who aren't exactly who may not be fond of it.
Do I get to do my rant?
Yes, you do. Storm. Wait,
soon. Go ahead. Hold on. Go ahead. Let me know.
Okay. David's just being David, but okay. Before I say anything, I want to hear the rant.
Storm over Gondolin. It is a fan film made by some folks out in France. And it looks like it has some pretty good production values, actually. I mean, it's not set to film until, like, 2015. Pre-production is going on right now. And they released a teaser video introducing, you know, the effort. And these settings that they have, you know, like the backgrounds, they've got mountains, you know, the setting fits the Lord of the Rings. The camera work, you know, is steady. It's high definition. It's got good, you know, good color metering or whatever. So it looks like it could do pretty well, and like the prosthetics that they have seem pretty decent. So I am hesitant but vaguely optimistic about the quality of this thing. So Terry, you're more versed in the Lord of the Rings kind of mythos than I am. So where does this take place, and what would happen in this the Storm over Gondolin?
This would almost certainly be something, from what I'm looking at here, this would almost certainly be something that's covered in the Silmarillion, I would think. The Fall of Gondolin. Well, this sounds like The Fall of Gondolin, right?
Yes. It says the upcoming film brings the audience into Beleriand during the height of Elven glory in the First Age. Set in the eponymous city, it was the last Elven stronghold in Middle-earth that stood against Morgoth. The threat of the Dark Lord was growing. The Middle Elves of Earth, the Elves of Middle-earth, were divided, and only Turgon, the King of Gondolin, stood in his path of ultimate victory. Amidst the intrigues and turmoil that threatened to expose the hidden city to the forces of Morgoth, Storm over Gondolin captures the journeys of the man and prophesied hero Tuor and his shipwrecked elf god Voronwë.
Woo, that was a lot to go over my head, man.
Yeah, same here, but yeah.
Oh, what does Sean have to rant about this? Because we don't need to hear what David has to say.
I'm not ranting about this. In fact, based on what I can see of the production value of the prosthetics and the shots of the environment, I would say there is about an 87% chance that this will be better than the atrocious attempt at storytelling that Peter Jackson has wrought.
Okay, go on. What do you mean by that?
What's your problem with that? Atrocious.
What's wrong with it? How? Give reasons.
Oh, wrong. So much wrong. They are beautiful, gorgeously shot, amazing looking, excellent cinematography, pretty darn good acting, good effects, but terrible, 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 terrible movies. They're bad movies.
Why?
Because they're too long. And don't get me wrong before you start in. It is of epic length. However, a motion picture has an optimal format, an optimal length, and Peter Jackson throws those movies out the window.
Terry's dropped his mic from rage.
I disagree that the beauty of the movies denotes breaking these rules. This is the very movies, and movies are good, and I can't deny that they're good movies. I fault them for creating the epic movie syndrome. And give me a minute before you denounce me on this, because it takes a little bit of thinking here. So the optimal movie length for a motion picture is about 90 minutes. If you can't tell a story in 90 minutes, it better be the best damn movie I've ever seen. Because a three-hour movie, it's a large investment, and three-hour movies to tell a 10-hour story is – and it works okay for Lord of the Rings. I don't like it. I definitely don't like it.
But
Peter Jackson has done – is helping promote that these movies are okay, where you get things like Avatar, where the story of the movie doesn't warrant the length. Or more importantly, the universally planned. But it would have worked as a great short 90-minute film, but 3 hours is too long for that story. And so my problem with Lord of the Rings of the length is I love everything about it except for
Skype cut him off. Except for what, Sean?
I wish that all that effort went into a 12-part miniseries, and that would have been something I would have been all right. But as is, I can't watch any of those movies more than once, and I never wish to again.
Your main problem with it is that it being this long, and it necessitates being that long for a movie, is that it perpetuates that it's okay to do so?
Well, it's okay to take things and make them horrendously long with no good meat.
David, shut up. Your opinion doesn't matter here.
It does. See, look, Jackson did a decent job, right? I guess you could say he's good. Half of the other film developers out there are terrible. Yet they're trying to emulate what Jackson is doing because his was successful.
Yeah, but there's no
Lord of the Rings spawned an assload of terrible long films that the only good thing about them is shiny.
So you're going to hold Lord of the Rings responsible for that?
You got to hold them responsible for
that. You have to hold them responsible.
They're the one who said, it's okay. Shiny is good. No one cares about your sustenance.
More importantly, for all the quality of Lord of the Rings, they still aren't good movies. They have of every award they've gotten, but that doesn't make them as their own piece of art, in my opinion, a good movie, because they're still too long for the format. What Peter Jackson has created, we allow it to pass because it was the first of its kind to really do it. And it did it well enough that at the time when we watched, the first time I watched Fellowship of the Rings, I saw it again immediately because it was this amazing experience. But now that the world has become accustomed to these long movies, going back and watching them isn't something that I can do devoting my attention only to that movie. The first time I saw Lord of the Rings in theaters, the movie was enough to keep my attention. Now I watch it, I just think, I can watch it while I, you know, do my chores and fix the laundry and vacuum the house, but it's not good enough to hold my attention on its own. However, if it was 12 hours long and each was only an hour and it was just as well produced and just as beautiful, just as gorgeous, I wouldn't have this problem because it would be properly spaced out. Like, so look, you don't read Lord of the Rings in one sitting. You read it in, like, you know, 8 or 12.
So you want natural resting points.
Yeah, I want it to be the pacing. I don't think the pacing of the movie is good. I think they're too long.
It kind of brought you up sometimes, then you went back down for a longer period of time, then you got a little spike of excitement, then right back down to boring for a very long time. And then at the end of the movie, you got something exciting. Other than that, you get these little bumps of nothing, and you kind of like fall asleep halfway through. And then you get the good thing at the end. The end is probably the only good parts of these movies.
Like, it's exceedingly difficult for me to explain this because I also come at this from someone who's not a film professional but was a film student, which is kind of like that. I feel like it misses the art of misses the mark of creating art as a film. I feel like it is a badly constructed film, but not a bad film.
Alexis, you sat down with me a couple of years back, and we watched all three of the movies back to back to back in one day. We saw The Hobbit. We saw The Hobbit how many times? All that kind of crap. So I want to hear your opinion on this. What do you think? What do you think of this? Am I alone?
Terry, don't kill me. No. if it's the extended editions, then,
ooh,
then
I can't watch those at all.
Yeah. Oh, I hate you guys.
Watching them all in a row, I admit there were times when I'm like, what time is it?
Look, Derek, when I'm probably the biggest Star Wars fan you know, right?
Yeah.
I can't even sit down and watch all six movies at once.
Well, is that really the fault of the length or just the first three movies?
I liked the first three movies. I'm probably one of the only people I know of who say specifically
I enjoyed
the first three movies.
I like episode two, okay, but I
liked episode one. I saw it twice when it first came out.
I enjoyed episode two,
but I kind of missed that one in theaters, which I still regret to this day. And I saw episode three in theaters, and I was very happy with it. Now, do I think they could have done better with them? Yes, but I am not one of those people out there who deny their existence because I live in a very fragile fantasy world.
And because Jar Jar
Binks anything
exists.
I don't agree with, needs to be expelled.
Actually, before we return to Lord of the Rings, David, I will tell you my one judgment of Star Wars, which is not unlike my judgment of Lord of the Rings. Very specific. The Lord of the Rings movies – I'm not the Lord of the Rings. I'm talking about Star Wars. I think it's a bad film. I think it's an okay script. If you read the script of the movie, I don't mind it.
Which one, Sean?
Of episode one. And okay. Episode three, you read the novelization of episode three. This is a pretty solid story, actually. You know,
I think the actor choice was kind of off.
Not even just the actor. I think there were problems with the direction, the art direction, and the film direction of those movies. I think the stories weren't necessarily bad. I think they were poorly produced.
So, and then again, since then, I've become very – very spoiled dated. With alternate universe stuff or extended universe stuff. So my favorite actual timeline within Star Wars is based in
the Old Republic.
So even then, my favorite parts are always going to be older stuff.
Lord of the Rings. Terry, I wasted 5 minutes, on a film with an opinion that nobody likes. Let's allow you to defend it and tell me why I'm a terrible, horrible person.
Frankly, I think you're looking at it from too much.
But Terry, he's thinking.
Thinking. Okay, look at it. Okay, I don't know how to defend it.
The other problem is I know already that you're a mega fan. You can watch all four of the existing movies back.
Don't feel right. That's why I do. I do right. almost but on a monthly or at least yearly basis. So
can't do that. So I can't count that. Like the fact that you could do that isn't a fair measure of the movie, I think, because you love the content. And I can watch like all of DuckTales, even though it's not necessarily a good cartoon, but I will not stop watching DuckTales. I will watch it forever.
For the record, I have to say that the extended editions, I found them a little long at times, but the theatrical releases I have no problem with.
I like the theatrical releases a bit. I think I'm bored to death by the Two Towers. I just think the battles are too long.
Helm's
Deep saved it, but I think the first movie had it worse. Too much very low in the first movie.
For me, typically movies, just like books, the longer they are, the better, because I get to spend more time in that world.
I only care for when the world's developing. I think part of my problem with the Lord of the Rings of them being so long is I think that
you're breaking up on us.
Oh, I'm sorry. I think my problem was that the movies don't need to be that long to tell the story they do. They'll say, like, here's an excellent battle, and check out how great and beautiful we can make the battle. But although that battle scene lasts, 15 or 20 minutes, that 15 or 20 minutes itself, like, several of those minutes, maybe half of those minutes, are just showing off. Sorry, but not actually moving the story forward. And any amount of footage that doesn't move the story forward and isn't essential to telling the story doesn't matter to me.
Look at it from the perspective, it's making you connect to the various things that are going on, keep you on the edge of your seat, connect you to the characters, connect you more to what is going on, making you care about it more by putting everything at risk.
Or it brings you out of the story because you're thinking, okay, why is it taking so long? I don't see anything here actually developing. It's just wide pan shots of everything. Look at how beautiful that sky is. No one cares about the orcs down there. Let's look at the sky.
Wait.
It's not necessary to tell the story. And that's the point, is every scene in a movie has to be part of telling the story. Yes, the battle happened. That's part of the story. But is the specific actions in the battle?
Would you prefer the battle scenes? Would you prefer the battle scenes to be that? The battle happened. Well, that's over now.
I would prefer the battle scenes to tell the important parts of the battle. So, the characters enter the battle. They get to the drawbridge. They get through the drawbridge. They go to whatever their goal is. I don't actually remember the battle, but something like that. And but when you tell those stories, you only need to focus on the points that actually move the story of the battle itself forward, not necessarily like, okay, so here's a story of the battle. Let's pause moving that battle's storytelling itself along to show Legolas jumping on a giant elephant and riding it for a while and stabbing it.
Oh, man, that's awesome. Actually,
see,
by the way,
that's why they put it.
All it did is showed off that Legolas is an annoying little asshole who really needs to get his legs chopped off at the knees.
Oh, man, David is way more passionate about this. I'm just a filmmaking guy talking about what I think the elements could have cleaned up
that's
and tightened the film.
David,
see, David Harry hates
David.
Lord of the Rings. Harry loves Lord of the Rings. His god
David
is
hates
wrong.
It. That's
and
how come.
I hate elves. They're the worst thing to ever happen ever in the history of everything.
You let him loose. I blame you, Sean. You told him it was okay to talk.
David, you and I are going to have a good time. I think.
I feel this is the start of a beautiful friendship.
I like how this is two versus two here, because I know Alexis and Terry love Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
I propose a road trip for me, because you guys all live together, and I hate you all, to Florida for David, or not David, Terry and Alexis to try and convince David and I that these movies are good with visual stimuli.
Star Trek battle.
I refuse to watch movies with them because I'll fall asleep halfway through them. They like to turn the lights off. I don't focus very well in the dark.
All right, well, we'll get as many spotlights as we can in a super bright room, and they'll just deal with it.
Oh, man,
that's a matter
you're one
of
those two,
David,
Sean?
Why aren't you watching this? Because I'm playing Pokemon, damn it.
And
we're
so
I'm multitasking.
David actually made my point. Lord of the Rings is a great movie to watch while you're also playing Game Boy.
Well, then again, I also play my Game Boy while I program. So.
You need to be doing something else. Like, Terry, when you watch Lord of the Rings, do you just do that and nothing else? You don't do anything at all but look at that screen. Nothing with your hands, nothing with your brain. Nothing.
There's room for a terrible joke
you know,
in here.
I can't really remember what – Terry doesn't do much with his brain on a daily basis, so
Alexis, why did you bring this up? Jake and I have, like, friendship over this topic.
See, we take things pretty easily here. So, you know, speaking about things not progressing.
Yes, just like our podcast.
Bumper.
I mean, what?
Oh, wait, we don't have an RPG Geek bumper, so we'll just jump right into The Strange by Monte Cook. So Monte Cook, if you cast your memory back to many podcasts ago, and actually just a couple, when we received the Kickstarter stuff from his campaign of Numenera, it is a role-playing game, you know, pen and paper role-playing game that takes place in a kind of future, a far, far future, where technology, you know, how technology was made essentially has become lost, and now it's, you know, considered magic, and it's got a loose battle system that
technomancy.
Yeah, I still want to play Numenera, Alexis, so I can attach those jumper cables to my nipples. Have an excuse not to be weird.
As a, what was it, a jack or something that has those weird kind
of
nano
powers?
No,
not a jack.
Powers?
It was a nano.
And so what you hear right now is the 400-some page book that I still... Yeah, 416-page book that I still to rip into. And Monte Cook is merciless because he's pumping out another RPG. This coming week, he's going to start his next campaign for The Strange. He co-created it with Bruce Cordell, who used to work at Wizards of the Coast. And he says it uses the same mechanics as Numenera, a rules engine called the Cypher System, but it utilizes them in a very different setting and in some very interesting and different ways. So it looks very space futuristic-like. And I don't know... And it also has like a fantasy theme in there, so it might be vaguely similar to Numenera? I don't know.
Some high techno-fantasy?
Yeah, yeah. But
yep,
not necessarily
that's definitely
as dystopian.
David's type of setting.
Not too much known at it about it at the moment, I take it.
Nope, but we'll see if we can get a hold of Monty and talk to him during or after the Kickstarter. So it's something to keep an eye on.
I was ignoring you all, and I heard techno setting, so like Shadowrun? Yeah, we're talking about Shadowrun now.
Close, actually. This Golem Arcana is made by the folks who make Shadowrun. There's 53 hours, as of this recording, to go in their Kickstarter. It is essentially an RPG that
digitally enhanced miniatures board game.
Exactly. The words came out of your mouth and they flowed, David.
It's right there on
the Kickstarter. Yeah, I know. I should have read.
Do your job, Alexis. You're the host.
So instead of having to mess with a whole bunch of miniatures and like keeping track of, oh, what the hell attack does this thing do, and what's its defense, and you know what terrain am I on, and is this a valid move? This essentially fuses technology with the old kind of miniatures thing. So you've got a base map or different tiles, and they have a whole bunch of little dots printed on them that you can't really see, and you have like this pen that looks like some sort of like rune or something. And
it kind of looks like those really strange pens you used to get as a child, you know, like safety pens.
Yeah. And you can tap like the board itself, and you can tap one of the characters, the miniatures, and then tap the board where you want to move it. It'll tell you if it's a legal move, like on an iPad or an iPhone that's connected to it, and say, okay, I want to attack this character. So you tap one miniature, you tap the other, you know, select the appropriate attack that's like on the base of the figure, and it'll calculate it for you if you want, or you can even roll the dice and input this stuff with the pen. So it looks pretty sweet. They've with 53 hours left, they have a goal of $500,000, and they only have $389,000. So we're really hoping they can reach it, but it looks pretty sweet.
Definitely gives a steampunk, magitech, cyberpunk feel to it.
And it's all about these giant golems that people like ride into battle and fight kind of like titan clashes with them. The base kind of game is about $65, and it brings quite a lot. You get the stylus, you get the app for Android, Mac, or Windows, 6 modular terrain tiles, the quick start rules and lore book, control cards, 2 10-sided die, a couple of miniatures, and their associated cards. So it's pretty neat.
Now, the only thing that would make it better is if the golems were powered by whale oil.
And it'd be whale punk.
You with your sick fascinations, David.
I can't help it.
Now, if I had a book geek kind of bumper, I would play it now. But we don't, at least not yet. And if we did have one, I lost it. So, I was surfing the interwebs, and stumbled upon something called a website called Pope Hat. It's a group blog where they post some interesting stuff. They're fairly new. And the title of this post was called History Must Be Curved. So, the idea here is that, quoting from a blog post, history must be curved, for there is a horizon in the affairs of mankind. Beyond this horizon, events pass out of historical consciousness and into myth. Accounts are shortened, complexities sloughed off, analogous figures fused, traditions abraded into anecdotes, real people become cultural heroes, archetypical beings performing iconic deeds. So, you know, it's the idea that history is so far back, you know, the account becomes so vague and, you know, it's so spectacular that, you know, it just... It becomes a myth, you know. People that were otherwise normal have like fantastic powers now, and it's a historical game of telephone, essentially.
It is something we do see a lot in real life, yeah. Especially here in our country of residence.
Yeah, let's not go into politics, but
not really politics as much as it is people's really weird fascination with stuff that happened 200 years ago. But you know,
yeah.
That's what you're talking about, like Abraham Lincoln fighting werewolves, that sort of thing.
No, that's something awesome. What is not awesome is people taking, you know, founding fathers and people of that and elevating them to godlike.
You mean
status.
BioShock? BioShock.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. You watching BioShock, David?
So I'll be playing it eventually here in a couple weeks once I get the DLC.
So apparently, there is the author of this blog post pointed us towards a book series that deals with this very thing. It is called the Spiral Arm series. And so it takes place in a far future on Earth, or far, you know, future, where people from Earth and like related planets are formed like the Confederacy. And then there's another group of people who are further out, and they are fighting over like these, like I guess these understandings of the past. And it's currently the first book in the cycle. The last book came out in June. Is $6.83 for Kindle. So if you're interested in this kind of historical, broad historical perspective on things, it's pretty interesting to get into.
I know that was important, but I heard get to work, Terry. That's what I heard.
To put it in the database. Yes. So hopefully by the time you're listening to this, it'll be in there. thank God that we finally have somebody who reads comics, Sean.
What was that?
People still read comics?
Yeah,
that
Sean.
That was a terrifying noise. Are we talking about comic books? I can talk about comic books. I have a comic book.
Are you vaguely familiar with Dynamite Entertainment?
No. Wait, maybe. Are you
familiar with The Phantom, The Green Hornet, Vampirella, Red Sonja, and The Bionic Man?
That was all broken up in the lost world of Skype.
The Phantom, Green Hornet, Vampirella.
Yeah, I know all about Dynamite. There's tons of comics.
Okay, cool.
Dynamite. Okay, I just had to see the logo first. It's been a few years since I worked at a comic shop. I worked at a comic shop for 4 years, and I never really read anything for Dynamite. They didn't actually interest me all that much.
Well, they've got a new comic series coming out by Bill Willingham, and it's all steampunk themed.
He's the Fables guy.
Yeah? Please tell us about Fables, because I have no idea what it is.
If you've ever seen ABC's Once Upon a Time, you are watching a fantastic ripoff of Bill Willingham's Fables. Fables is a comic about your favorite fairy tale characters living in the real world, quote unquote. But they don't live there because some stupid curse banished them, like on, you know, the ABC show. They live there because there was a giant war in their world, in the lands of where our fairy tales come from. And they're like, man, this war sucks. We got to get out of here. So they created the portal. And they came to our world where, you know, there's no magic, but, you know, they're immortal for
some strange reason.
Some complicated.
Skype lands. Their
original fairy tales. And they live in a secret.
You know what, Sean? Let's bring you back because Skype land is not being kind to you.
So unlike the ABC show where they just kind of went into this world because of some stupid curse, they actually were escaping a giant war that was happening in their time. And so a lot of the well-known fairy tale fables run off to New York and live in a top-secret community that they created where they just kind of live there more, you know, with immortality. And it's very complicated and a weird series, but it's also really deep. There's great characters, great storytelling, and it's very highly recommended. And Bill Willingham is one of the lead creatives on it.
Okay, so that bodes well for this kind of thing, where he's taken the Green Hornet and others into like a steampunk world called Legendary, spelled D-E-R-R-Y.
I
kind of
like that, Alexis, and others. They're not important enough to be named.
The Green Hornet is the only one I really know.
So he's reimagining, so the point is he reimagines existing properties into a steampunk setting?
Yeah.
I like Willingham, but I'm pretty over steampunk.
I don't think we get enough of it. I mean...
No, it's done. We're over it.
I mean, where have we gotten along?
You're over it too, Alexis.
The new big thing, Alexis, is whale punk.
Whale punk. Here we go again. You keep unleashing David. Well,
this thing isn't going to be a huge, you know, run. It's only going to be a 7-issue limited series, so we're not going to get a whole bunch of it.
I don't know. 7 issues is quite a bit, but it's good to know that he's set a limit to the issues because Superman
get weird real fast.
Well, I mean, the thing about comics is I love comic books, and I've been reading my whole life. And although I like a lot of the old superhero series, they've kind of been going on for 1,000 issues each. And it's, around 800, really. But, you know, hundreds and hundreds of issues, and it's getting a little tiring, you know, because how many stories about the Superman or Batman or the Flash can you tell?
It's true. Actually, something I heard on the Back to Work podcast by Merlin Mann and Dan Benjamin over at 5x5, they mentioned The Court of Owls, which is a Batman series. Apparently, The Court of Owls, I don't know if any of you guys are familiar with them, they're a kind of...
It's the grave behind my house, Alexis.
They're a secret kind of organized crime society and secret society in Batman and other DC comics that have secretly existed for over a century in Gotham City. So that alone has caught my attention. Apparently their first appearance was in Batman number 1 in December of 2011. So that's something if I'm going to get into comics, which I probably should, you know, here at Geek Improvement, I should get into. Sounds like my kind of storyline.
I don't know. I've never really found a way to justify buying comics.
It's an expensive hobby, that's for sure.
It is. I don't really know if they're more durable than books. And, you know, I kind of like the durability of books compared to the kind of floppiness of comics.
Well, what about digital releases?
If I can get them for free, I'd be all over them.
The problem with digital releases is... Well, actually, one good thing about the digital... One other thing about comics digital releases is they are cheaper after a time. So if you don't want to get your comics right away, a lot of times they'll be $3.99, which is an absurd price for comics, by the way. They'll be $3.99 at launch, and then a month later they'll be $2.99 or $1.99, which is acceptable. You can get a discount on your comics that way. But it just it's I kind of feel the same way as I feel about digital video games, is they should just be a little bit cheaper to start out because you're saving the company on that that shipping cost.
You don't have the shipping cost. You don't have the – was it the manufacturing cost or any of that kind of stuff.
To be fair, also with digital comics, you also don't have the advertising that you get in normal physical back comics.
I don't know. If they had stopped making advertisements that would autoplay all the damn time, maybe most of us wouldn't be using our little favorite add-on for our browsers.
You don't get autoplay content in comics digitally, so that doesn't
work. What comics are you reading, David?
I figured they were all online and you accessed them like that, so.
No, well, you get them through apps, and usually they'll download to your tablet or whatever. But they doesn't play any ads first. You just pay for the content like you would pay for an iTunes episode.
People pay for iTunes? Wait, well, I should say that people use iTunes voluntarily?
Well, I use Amazon, but. So actually, here's something else special y'all should know about me. I do not have any content that I do not have legally access to. I have not pirated anything in probably about a decade.
Sean, new thing,
upstanding digital citizen.
What? Actually, this is a matter of when I was in film school. I thought, I don't want people not paying for my stuff. I want people to give me money. I better give other people money.
So eventually it'll come back around, yeah.
No, well, you know, just so I wasn't a hypocrite. But, you know, I understand what you're going at. The system is definitely not good. And I'm not personally satisfied with how much with the current digital comic system or necessarily the digital video system either.
Gadget Geek.
That scared the hell out of me.
Yeah. Thanks for the warning, pal.
Sorry, guys. I got to lower the volume.
It always terrifies Terry, and it's my favorite time of the podcast.
So, Sean, we hear you have a new keyboard / controller / ergonomic thing that you've been playing
around
with.
Terrifying, most terrifying thing I've ever seen in my shirt. Just looking at it.
It's true. I have a device. It's a device
of sorts.
It's called
the Alpha Grip. So
the Alpha Grip.
What does it do?
This is definitely not new technology, but there will be these exact words will appear in Engadget at some point in the future as I write about it. But I have a obscenely strange fascination with odd input devices.
Skype's eating
or a mouse. I have to have it. I have to play with it. I just can't stop myself. My main keyboard, well, the exception of my gaming keyboard, is something called a SafeType keyboard, which is a keyboard that is vertical and very strange. But that does not hold a candle to the Alpha Grip. Am I still going?
Yeah, we can.
All right. So the Alpha Grip is technically a keyboard where, you know, you type letters on. But it doesn't look like a keyboard. It looks a little bit more like a video game controller. It's very hard to – so picture a video game controller where instead of a right thumbstick, you have a trackball. Not too hard to imagine. But instead of directional pad buttons, you have C, Y, K, and L over there. That's a little strange. Why would you have C, K, Y, and L? And on the right side, instead of a D and whatever, you have enter, backspace, space, and tab. And then on the back, where your fingers rest, and you would normally just have a single two trigger.
Oh, there was a back. I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. On the back side of the controller, you have M, U, N, H, I, O, B, P, E, D, S, W, A, Q, T, F, R, and G, which you all trigger with independently. It's running up and down the back. So it's basically a video game controller where at all points your fingers are resting on a letter key and you type with this controller.
Wow.
I cannot imagine using this. Like, as complicated as this thing looks, with all the buttons there, you'd have to be some kind of Android to work it correctly or fastly, comfortably.
Well, Sean, you're up to how many words per minute on this thing right now?
So if I'm not using punctuation, I can get between 30 and 35 words a minute. And this is after about, you know, casually using it when I'm not doing something important for a week or two. I don't know how many hours I put into it. The creator said you probably need about 40 hours to get up to 60 words per minute. I'm a little dubious I can get up to 60 words per minute, but the fact that I can even type over 25 words a minute with this thing is extremely impressive to me because it is a monstrosity. But the more I use it, the more I see.
What?
It's very fascinating and strange, but the more I use it, the more I think I can actually use this to type with naturally. The only problem is my hands are a little too big. I can't quite use the button combinations that require punctuation. But
so the benefit of this thing is that it's comfortable, right? Is it comfortable?
So it's interesting. If you go to the Alpha Grip website, it's actually alphagrips.com. It says on it that this is the world's most comfortable ergonomic keyboard and trackball for gaming and computing. But if you look at the fine print of the device that comes with it when you purchase it and unfold it, it says
may not be world's most comfortable.
No, it says in small. This is not an ergonomic keyboard. No tests have been done to verify that it is more ergonomic or healthier for you than a normal keyboard. Use at your own risk.
Shouldn't that be printed nice and small on the front page instead?
Well, this is part of my ongoing fascination. As someone who grew up using computers and playing video games, I have a very painful carpal tunnel issue. So that's why I have the vertical keyboard I mentioned previously is it actually is less strain on your fingers for your hands to be typing in an upright position rather than laid down position. But that's kind of a hard thing to do on a go, and you have to be sitting very upright to do it. The idea of the iGrip, Alpha Grip keyboard, is that you can mouse and keyboard while slouching back on a couch very casually and with your hands still in that horizontal position of the horizontal keyboard that's more comfortable. And it's supposed to be more ergonomic. I'm not sure if it is easier on my hands or wrists or not, but it's been an interesting experiment. And by the end of the 40 days, they do promise a full refund.
So I have to ask, normally when you're using your keyboard of choice, how fast can you typically, how many words per minute can you churn out?
I don't know, 80 or 90 easily.
Okay, so it's get there.
I'm a pretty good typo master, so I could probably get around 75 with being accurate. But I'm pretty fast on a proper mechanical keyboard. So going down to 30 is a painful experience. But, you know, 30 is pretty fast for some grandmas and my parents.
And potentially me. So we have some other computers.
Hunt and peck for the win, Alexis.
Well, it's not necessarily hunt and peck, which is strange because I can type with, like,
in
four
summary,
fingers.
Though, if you're into interesting devices, you know, check out the Alpha Grip. It will terrify you. It was actually originally designed as a mobile computing platform. The original Alpha Grip was a computer, not just a keyboard.
It wasn't a torture device.
Boomerang.
You know, it's actually here's the thing. Anyone who's a keyboard enthusiast knows about the Dvorak alternate keyboard. I find this easier to use than Dvorak.
Man.
And that's saying quite
that's
a
saying
bit.
Something, yeah, because the form factor is so strange, yeah.
Yeah, but and since it won't diminish, like it won't distract your QWERTY skills because it's such a different experience. It doesn't really overlap. But Terry, didn't you have like a million questions about as why?
No, you basically answered him. It's just the biggest one was why. I'm looking at this and I just can't understand it. Like
fascination with these kind of devices. I mean, we have this main input device for your computers based on typewriters, and it's like, well, why? What other options could we have had? And this is sort of interesting. But my main fascination, I discovered it mostly because I wanted a way to control my computer on my couch through a pipe through my HDTV in a more comfortable, convenient way. And I just wasn't finding one that was serious. And then I found this. And I don't believe its claims at all, but it says, oh, yeah, you can use it to play video games. No, that's a ridiculous claim. It's a ridiculous idea.
I don't know. Using two hands just for your keyboard kind of defeats the purpose.
Have you attempted to do anything
else?
Skype.
Is your traditional keyboard? I use one of my hands on the mouse, and my other hand is on the keyboard.
Well, the iGrip controller has a mouse and keyboard built in at the same
it's
time.
It's got a trackpad. That thing is like worse.
The trackball. Yeah, the trackball is.
It's like actually almost as bad as a little thingy that comes on laptops, little trackpads.
Have you actually attempted to play any games with it, or have you just typed?
I've mostly just typed. I've played one game. It's a typing game. It's called Z-Type. Oh, I was playing Typing of the Dead with it, but that doesn't count. I haven't played any games. The only one that I can see, say, World of Warcraft, which I guess if you remap your controls to some insane... I can't see any WASD controls with this because the S is my my ring finger, the A is my pinky, D is my index finger, E is my middle finger. And so I can't see walking around comfortably with this without remapping the controls significantly. But I could see using it for a game like The Sims very easily, anything that's point and click, or Civilization, where you would just want to kind of sit back lazily and use a mouse-based game on a TV interface. But I think the real advantage is being able to relax back in a lazy chair and still be able to type comfortably without having a mouse in your lap. It's definitely not a gaming device, though.
And I've got to ask, on the bottom kind of handles, it looks like it has these little nubs. When I first saw it, I thought, well, are those analog kind of sticks?
Oh, the nubs at the very bottom of the thing? No, those are nubs designed so you can prop it up on your belt or whatever. You know, it's designed to be held. One annoying thing, plastic base so you can prop it up so it's always standing upright. This is because if you lay it down, like, on a surface,
it toggles
the keys because the bottom of it is covered in keys.
Right.
It does think it'll have a pause button that suspends all uses of the controller, though.
Man.
So, anyway, it's super weird. Check it out. AlphaGrips.com. Look for a hands-on for it on Engadget at some time in the next 2 months. I don't know when.
We have some other stories here. Oh, not necessarily new stories, but the cool things that we've stumbled upon. Not necessarily gadgets, but more software-based. Oberon OS. I was trolling, Hacker News, news.ycombinator.com, and stumbled upon an old post from 2009, a blog post by Lucas Mathis, and he was detailing how he went to university at a place called ETH Zurich out in Switzerland, and how the university had developed their very own OS, and it was a GUI, like it kind of like a genealogy. It would stem away from like the Mac/Windows kind of stance from like Xerox PARC and like take a hard left. And this thing is a GUI, so you know you've got, you know, Windows and whatnot, but everything is a command line. There you can have as many windows as you want, and all the windows are command lines. For example, you can type a certain command out in text, and you click on it and it launches a new window or it launches a program. And the desktop itself is like infinitely zoomable, so it's like one of those fancy like JavaScript slideshows that you can like zoom in to, or zoom out to see different slides and like different areas and whatnot. So you can zoom out as far as you want, zoom in as close as you want, and have as many windows and arrange them in whatever order. And best of all, it is available to download, so you can play with it. Probably in a virtual machine. So it's called Oberon, and I think the release is called Blue Bottle. Yeah.
So, this looks super weird.
Yeah. It's been used since the late 80s, and it's still being used today out there.
If you'll excuse me for a minute. If Linux wasn't command line and geeky enough for you, there's now Oberon. More windows, more command lines for all your geeky needs. Your friends use Windows, you can use even more command lines to make them feel inferior. For the geek that wants to put everyone down.
For the geek there's that wants a little Oberon. Dash of hipster in their life.
Was that actually on the side, or was that all you? Because that was beautiful.
That was me. I don't have half the voice Alexis does, but I can do it.
But, yeah, I thought, man, this is weird. So if any of you guys out there are interested in giving this a go, head over to the show notes, because the URL is too strange to give out. V-Line. I can't remember where I stumbled onto this again. Probably Hacker News is again. It is very, very simple video chat. So instead of having to worry about, and it uses WebRTC, so instead of having to worry about installing something like a program like Skype or signing up for an account or adding a user as a friend, what you do is you just copy a link, which is automatically generated once you visit the site, give it to somebody else, and once you visit there, there'll be a video chat in the browser. It actually works pretty well, good video quality.
But do they have a mobile app?
No, I don't think so, because this is only working with browsers that have certain WebRTC support, which is right now Chrome 22 or something and Mozilla something, or Firefox something and up. So if you're using Internet Explorer, you're kind of out of luck unless you're using like a Chrome extension.
Mm. Still pretty handy, but it is limited by some compatibility.
But it's an interesting concept, and it's free for now while it's in beta, at least. And I have a feeling that the main service will continue to be free, but for the developers, they'll probably naturally charge for the API.
Put a limit on how many people can be in a chat at once.
Yeah, I don't know what the limit is here. It just says multi-party chat supported or whatever, so quite a few, I would assume. So anyway, give it a shot. If you want to leak something like Edward Snowden to Mr. Buckley here, you know, you can be anonymous, maybe. If the NSA isn't watching, of course.
Jeff is always watching. He helped me beat the Elite Four last night.
Well, again, Jeff is our personal NSA liaison. One last thing here to wrap up the show before we scurry on off is something for people who like hacking, you know, physical things and, you know, people who are makers. Particularly if they're, you know, we've seen 3D printers and whatnot to make plastic stuff, trinkets and, like, parts and, well, pieces for whatever kind of mechanical thing you want to build. But carbon fiber really hasn't entered into, like, the home kind of production space or, like, the small-scale production kind of thing. And these folks, specifically Turner Hunt over on Kickstarter, is hoping to raise $67,500 to make the X-Winder. So it is a carbon filament winder, and it is like this giant tube that rolls carbon fiber, and you can make tubes of carbon fiber to make like structural parts, like parts of an airplane, parts of a hang glider, whatever the hell you want to make.
Wind turbine blades.
Yeah, pretty much.
Murder equipment.
And it was done in the den the kitchen with a tube of carbon fiber. And so it's pretty pricey. It's not, you know, just like most 3D printers. It's $1,395. So it's not for folks who are thinking, you know, I might want to try this one day. It's if there's something that you have in mind already that can benefit from carbon fiber, this might be something you want to look at.
Only if you plan on probably using that extensively.
Sean, I hear you want to build a table out of carbon fiber.
No.
No?
Carbon fiber is for chumps. I'm a hipster, and I like wood.
Oh, no.
Don't take that wrong.
So does Terry's mom.
Oh, oh, God. It just wouldn't be the podcast if you didn't get one in, right, David?
Oh, I had to do it sometime. I was going to do it earlier, but I couldn't find a good spot to put it in.
So close to the end.
That was a good one, though.
So close to keeping it clean.
Yep, so close. Well, I guess that's about it for this Pokemon.
Oh, wait, I got one more thing.
Oh, you do?
The people have to know. Cookies baked for this podcast from amateur cookie clicker Mr. Sean. 600. Oh, gosh, it keeps going up.
You need more grandmas. Get more grandmas. They're always a good investment.
How many cookies per second are you up to? That's the big thing.
66,000.
And that was just over the course of the podcast.
Yeah, this game is far more complex than I gave it credit for.
See?
That's it. I just thought the listeners needed to know the cookie clicker update. Now I'm going to spend all my 4 million cookies on Alchemy Labs. Okay.
One of us.
Google gobble, Google gobble. So, Sean, thanks for being here. We had a blast, and it was... It was good to stand back and watch the firefight between you and Terry.
There are things to learn about Lord of the Rings. It's terrible. That's what you need to know, Terry.
So if you want to email Sean hate mail, you can email him at sean@gmail.com. And
that's thankfully not it.
Exactly. You can stalk him on Twitter at Seanicus. That's SEANICCUS. You can find me at Alexis Santos. You can find David at He Who Smells Pie. And you can find Terry at his email, terry@geekimprovement.com, because he is still our one Twitter holdout. We'll get to him someday.
I've survived another week.
Terry has never found the enjoyment of twittering sushi to the masses.
Yeah, it's Terry. He's fighting with his microphone because apparently it wants him to join Twitter as well.
Did you see all that sushi, Alexis? It was awesome.
Yeah, I wish I could have been there, but I didn't eaten dinner just before. So if you want to email the podcast, you can email us at podcast@geekimprovement.com, or you can call in at 65-RING-GEEK. That's 657-464-4335. Naturally, if you have topics for the show you think we should cover, book reviews, movie reviews, anything you'd like to recommend, toss it our way. So for myself, Sean, I was about to say Zach, but Zach's not here. Terry and David, thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. It is done.
Outro music, go!
Nah, I had that in post.
Well, then you can keep that clip where I say that if you want. I'll even say it again. Wait, what was that noise?
That was my mouse.
But David, stop trying to request my contact during a podcast.
Patrick says, because of that cookie game, that cost me 2 weeks of my life.
Oh, yes! Brought someone down with us!
We'll get into that.
United States, Canada, Mexico, Panama, Haiti, Jamaica, Peru, Republic, Dominican, Cuba, Caribbean, Greenland. I can't do it. Greenland, El Salvador, too.